from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Over half of California is covered in rangeland, and today 15 million acres of open space are protected because of the Williamson Law, a California Conservation Act, which since 1965 has offered tax relief to ranch and farm owners who preserve their land. But according to new research out of UC Davis, published in the October-December peer-reviewed research journal California Agriculture, recent cuts to state funding for the act are putting 20% of this rangeland at risk for development. We'll discuss the Williamson Act in this forum segment, its impact on conservation and ranching in California, and the new research out of UC Davis. Joining us here in studio is Linda Hunsinger. She is professor of rangeland ecology and management and chair of the Division of Society and Environment, UC Berkeley. Welcome.
Thank you.
Lauren Sommer is also with us in studio, science and environmental reporter for KQED Public Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lauren. And we'll be talking to you, of course, and other people in the course of this segment because it's an important issue, Lynn Hunsinger. Why is it important?
Well, it's important because, as you mentioned, half of the state is rangeland, and about 20 million acres are owned or by ranchers who graze that rangeland, the private part of the rangeland. And that rangeland produces incredible an incredibly diverse and abundant number of ecosystem services, which the public enjoys today in California, including wildlife habitat for endangered species, as well as the deer and other animals that we like to see. It's a wonderful thing to look at when you're driving down the freeway. You like to look out and see the oaks. All this land that's around here, the beautiful oak woodlands and grasslands that we like to look at, that's rangeland and very much likely to be owned by ranchers.
And if it's used for agricultural purposes, essentially they get reduction in property tax, going back to 1965 law. Yeah.
Yes, grazing livestock is considered an agricultural purpose. It produces meat that we consume as well as leather products and so on. So it qualifies.
And this is a California conservation law that has been in effect all these years. The fear is with budget cuts that it's not only affecting ranchers, but according to this Davis study, it tells us what?
Well, the funding was cut in 2009 by the governor, in order to save money for the state's general fund. It was cut from $37 million to about $1,000, which is a pretty big cut. And that money was money that went to counties to help compensate them for reducing the taxes on ranches and farms that were enrolled in the Williamson Act to the production value of the land.
And we're talking about the possibility of 20% of acreage actually we're talking about the possibility of changing the whole face of the state, really.
That's right. The Davis study showed that about 20% of rangelands are highly vulnerable to this cut in the Williamson Act funding.
And without support, we should mention, of the Act, 37% of ranches, according to the Davis study, would sell some or all of their rangeland. And the predicted buyers, according to the study, I don't know how much you can predict buyers, but they're talking about maybe three-quarters of them would develop for non-agricultural purposes.
Well, ranchers today, they often get offers for their land. People want to develop those lands into high-value properties, golf courses, homes, starter castles, as we like to call them, all those things. So they have a pretty good idea of what would happen to their land if they didn't keep it in ranching and didn't want so much to keep it together. So in the study, three-quarters of them thought that if they did sell their land, it would go into one of those more intensively developed uses.
And Lauren Sommer, let's hear from you. I mean, you were out there and talking to the ranchers and learned what?
Yeah, it's been a really interesting couple years. As Lynn mentioned, the funding was basically eliminated for this program. And the way that it works is that farmers and ranchers, they go to their county, they sign a contract for 10 or 20 years that says, I'm going to keep ranching or farming, and I promise not to develop my land. Now, since counties aren't getting paid back by the state anymore for this, each of them has kind of tried to figure out whether they can keep this program going or whether they have to eliminate it to get that property tax funding back. So we've seen different counties do different things. A number of them right at the beginning said, you know what, we can't afford to do this. When Williamson Act contracts come up, we're not going to renew them. Other counties have developed this kind of interesting workaround. They've said, what we're going to do is reduce the contract by about 10%, so in some cases from 10 years to 9 years. And in return, they get a 10% tax increase from these farmers or ranchers. It's kind of a way of maybe just keeping the program going, getting the county a little bit more revenue, and that way farmers are still getting this benefit. But in other counties like Fresno, this has been a huge debate. They're absorbing all of these losses just to kind of keep this program going. So we're really seeing different counties kind of do different things to keep this around.
And there's some talk about solar panel development, too?
That's also been really interesting. I mean, when you think about it, the things that make farmland good for growing crops are the things that would make it good for solar energy. It's flat and it gets lots of sun. Typically, it's very difficult to get out of Williamson Act contracts. So last year, the governor signed a bill that made it easier for land to go from farmland into these, you know, 20-year solar farms. But it's been very controversial. Earlier this year, the Fresno County Farm Bureau actually filed a lawsuit saying, after the county approved this new solar farm on some Williamson Act land, they sued saying it was not actually part of the intent of the Williamson Act. They want to see this farmland continue in production, and they don't want to see it turn into solar farms.
So it's being handled county by county, as you suggest. But one of the ironies in all this is that probably less than half of these farms actually make a profit. And those that do make a profit, from what I read, about 70% of it is less than $10,000.
Yeah, certainly ranchers benefit a little bit more from the Williamson Act than farmers do. And that's for a very basic reason. It takes a lot more land to raise cows than it does to actually grow tomatoes. Some of these ranchers have very thin margins. It's not easy to make a living this way.
And we're talking about, again, the whole landscape of California in terms of open space, really possibly being altered irrevocably.
Well, I think this is, it's kind of an interesting debate. I mean, certainly here in California, we love these kind of rolling hills when you drive through, as Lynn mentioned, we love this landscape. Right now, though, the economy's down. A lot of people argue that the development pressure isn't there. But ranchers are saying, you know what, when the economy comes back, there's going to be a lot of pressure to build on these lands again. And that's when we're going to kind of see these kind of turnovers from ranch land to development.
To suburban development, irrigated agriculture? What are we talking about here, or both?
Well, if we're talking about the Bay Area, most of the land in the Williamson Act around the Bay Area is range lands. And that is most likely to be turned into residential development because it's hilly. And it's considered ideal to have a house on a hillside in the oak woodland. So I suspect that in the Bay Area, most of that conversion would be to residential area.
Well, this is a subject or topic that hits many of our listeners where they live, literally. I'm going to actually invite your participation in this conversation. You may want to add to it or contribute to it, but you also may have questions or comments. And if you'd like to join us, you can do that now. Our toll-free number is available to you. Let me give it out. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls, so feel free to join us by phone. 866-733-6786. And, of course, there are other ways of joining us. You can email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment, or go to our Facebook page. Again, over half of California is covered in rangeland, and today 15 million acres of open space are protected because of the Williamson Act, which since 1965 has offered tax relief to ranch and farm owners who preserve their land. But this new research out of UC Davis, a number of doctoral students did, talks about recent cuts to state funding for the act, they're putting 20% of this rangeland at risk for development, and we're talking about all of that in this segment. You may want to join us. You can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, and we'll bring your calls and emails into this discussion momentarily. I want to talk, though, to Daryl Sweet, who's a fifth-generation cattle rancher. He's located east of Livermore in Altamont Hills, past president of the California Cattlemen's Association and on the board of directors of the California Rangeland Trust. And Daryl Sweet, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, the effect of this on agriculture, about the cuts and how they're being dealt with.
Well, as was mentioned in the conversation, it's, you know, going county by county. In our case, we're in Alameda County. Alameda County has chosen to continue with the Williamson Act and absorb the loss of subvention funds. One thing I would point out, the subvention funds that came from the state back down to the counties amounted to $1 an acre for every acre that's of non-prime agricultural land, and it was $5 an acre on the prime land, which would be more intensively farmland. So in Alameda County, the loss of subvention funds has been approximately $90,000 a year. So Alameda County, you know, has decided to that amount of money compared to the entire budget is relatively small. But again, as was mentioned, that goes county by county, and for some counties it was significantly more money, and particularly in rural counties.
Well, you're taxed on agricultural value. Will you graze cows on your land?
Yes.
And what about if you compare it to market value? I mean, the land value is worth more to convert it, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. You know, under the Williamson Act in Alameda County, so our ranch here is, you know, the ag value is about $400 an acre. Public agencies, a ranch near us, was recently purchased by Contra Costa Water District for mitigation ground, and that was, they paid close to $10,000 an acre for it. So, you know, it gives you an idea of the disparity, and it's particularly important, as Dr. Hunsinger mentioned, in places like the Bay Area, because obviously we have very elevated real estate values in the Bay Area.
So what are owners going to try to do in the wake of all this?
Well, as I say, it depends on the county. So far, our county has decided that it's going to continue the Williamson Act and absorb the loss. So our contracts, and I would point out that these 10-year contracts are what they call rolling contracts. So every year they add another year onto it. So a 10-year contract each year self-renews unless either the landowner or the county non-renews it, then it has 10 years to expire. So anyway, our you know, we're secure in this county. In other counties, it's just up in the air.
No, most owners are being dictated to by the counties.
It's county by county, really.
And can you talk a little bit about your ranch? How much is ranch land, and what do you farm or ranch? You talked about the cows. What else?
Well, that's all we do. I mean, we graze cows. We have a herd of breeding mother cows, and we raise calves. The cows stay here year-round, and then we sell the calves annually as production. So that's what we produce. And
Darrell Sweet, again, fifth-generation cattle rancher. He's located east of Livermore in the Altamont Hills and is past president of the California Cattlemen's Association. And we thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
We're here in studio with Lauren Sommer, who is science and environmental reporter for KQED Radio, and Lynn Hunsinger, professor of rangeland ecology and management. She chairs the Division of Society and Environment at UC Berkeley. And let's bring our callers in. And again, feel free to join us here. It's toll free at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. Post your questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. And let's go to Alice, who's joining us from Oakland. Alice, you're on.
Hi, yeah, I have an unusual situation where I bought a hillside that is currently zoned residential, and I'd like to have it converted to rangeland. Is there any advice for somebody like that? Because I'd like to keep it wild.
Yeah. Lynn Hunsinger?
I am not sure. There's various restrictions on how many acres you have to have. Generally, the purpose of the Williamson Act was to conserve agriculturally productive land, so it's not so much for what you're talking about, but you might talk to local parks, to the city, to other agencies that might be interested in that. I'm not sure how small a property can be and be put under a conservation easement, but that's something that maintains the private ownership of the land. And if the land has enough conservation value, you might be able to find someone who would put a conservation easement on that land, which means that it can't be developed in the future.
And good luck, Alice. Thank you for the call. We'll go to another caller, and that's Babette. Hi, Babette.
Hi. Thanks so much. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask a question whether or not there's been any sort of regional attempts to organize counties that might not be able to support themselves, but they still provide an enhancement for all of us Northern Californians and all of our tourists. And so I'll thank you very much for anything.
Yeah, well, Lauren Sommer, have you seen much of that kind of, grassroots organizing?
I mean, certainly there's been a major outcry when the funding was eliminated. People tried to introduce bills to reinstate the funding. I mean, I think a lot of people haven't given up hope that this program will come back. I mean, it's almost 50 years old, so it's certainly had a legacy in this state. I think for now, a lot of counties are signing on to this kind of 10% workaround that I mentioned, you know, getting a little bit more property taxes into the county, but still giving them a tax break. A lot of people are kind of crossing their fingers to maybe a day when we actually see the funding come back.
It strikes me that Well, I mean, what do you detect of the developers? They have a great deal of interest in this, I mean, in terms of their role in Hunziker.
I don't really know how the developers have responded to the Williamson Act. One of the purposes of the Williamson Act were to protect ag land, to promote efficient and orderly growth. So it's not an anti-growth piece of legislation in particular. It just says that the costs of leapfrog development are a bit much to bear and that we should plan for maintaining ag land. The other purpose of the law is to protect open space for the public. So, of course, as has already been mentioned, development pressure has dropped a bit in recent years because of the economy. So I don't know myself of an organized response.
Do you know, well, let me go back to you, Lauren Sommer. Professor Hunziker had mentioned before about the ecosystem services that come about as a result of rangeland. Can you amplify that for us somewhat?
Yeah, I think that's kind of an interesting angle to this. You know, the environmental groups are very supportive of the Williamson Act on a whole because in a lot of rangelands, there are some very unique ecosystems that exist. Maybe people have heard of vernal pools. They're these kind of very unique little water bodies that form during the wet season here in California. And they support really interesting ecosystems. Endangered tiger salamanders are found there. They're very unique. And they've been found to kind of coexist well with ranching operations. So certainly that's a huge important thing for a lot of environmental groups. And then this question of ecosystem services, maybe Lynn, you can expand on that. You know, our water, our land, there's a lot of things that we benefit from having.
From having it not put to intensive use.
That's right. Most of the water, drinking water that we use in the state flows through rangelands and comes from groundwater and overland flow that passes through rangelands. So it's much more likely that that water remains usable and clean when it goes through rangelands rather than developments.
Yeah, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about that because we're talking about the reservoirs here, really. We're
right.
Talking about water, I mean, water supply, which, you know, was maybe the new gold.
No. That's right. And most of it does pass through or come from rangelands. I wanted to just add a little bit to some of the things that are produced. I want to just challenge Gerald's statement a little bit that he produces only cows. Grazed lands and ranging lands produce a lot of wildlife. And the interesting thing is that there has been a lot of research recently that's shown that grazing can in many ways, because of the particular characteristics of our ecosystem in California, can really benefit wildlife species. She mentioned vernal pools. Grazing allows the water to remain in them longer and cuts down some of the taller grasses that shade out small plants. We've had cases now in Alameda and Contra Costa County where the public has demanded the return of grazing because without grazing, the flowers are overcome by non-native species that cover our grasslands. And then the endangered tiger salamander, certain kinds of endangered butterflies, and a variety of other species have been found to benefit from grazing. So that's a wonderful sort of synergy that allows us to conserve these areas.
So much is involved in this story. I mean, it's not only open space and the environmental issues, including water and grazing and ecosystem, but it's the beauty, it's the aesthetics of California and mm-hmm. California ranching being vulnerable. Let's bring more of our callers in here, and we'll go, in fact, to Will as our next caller. Will, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Our family has owned a ranch in Petaluma, which we graze sheep and cattle on, about 600 acres, and it's been in the Williamson Act for quite some time. And we wouldn't be able to keep it without that. The profit margin is so small on agriculture that, we're lucky to break even on it and keep it in the family.
I think this is a situation, Laura Sommer, that you probably are hearing all over the state, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think we kind of haven't really seen the real effect of this yet. As we mentioned, these kind of contracts roll over every 10 years. So, you know, certainly ranchers are really worried. They're really concerned about the future of kind of their land. But I think we haven't kind of really seen the full brunt of this yet.
That's right. There's a lag time.
Let me thank the caller and bring on more of your calls. Peter is next. Peter, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. This very interesting conversation has been assuming, as I understand it, that the only way to protect ranches and to keep ranches from being developed as properties is to pay the owners of them in one way or another not to sell land so the land can be developed or not to develop it themselves. But there is an alternative way, and that would see that would be to use what we use everywhere else in cities and suburbs, and that is zoning, adopting zoning restrictions that would similarly restrict the properties. At a time when we can't afford, perhaps, because of fiscal problems in the state, to pay people not to develop their properties, why don't we consider the alternative of simply restricting those developments through the zoning system?
Lynn Hunting.
Well, that's an interesting question. Zoning cannot, as I understand it, force someone to maintain land that they can't make a living off of. So if land is not viable, first of all, you can't zone it as something that it's not viable for. So the problem, there's a problem there. Also, what they did a survey of planners throughout the state, and most of them felt that the Williamson Act was an incredibly useful tool to them in their development of their general plan and locating what they call agricultural preserves. The Williamson Act goes in hand with the designation of areas for agriculture in the general plan. So most planners feel that it's very useful and really helps them do planning in their counties.
And let me thank you, Peter, for the call. Well, here's another point of view from a listener named Joseph who says, isn't the Williamson Act a huge hidden subsidy for large landholders? It's a good thing to have sunshine on this act so the counties can examine it. Yeah, Lauren Summer, you going to say something?
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, I think...
Interesting point of view.
No,
yeah.
And it's a really important question about what we value. I mean, it just depends on which values you really want to monetize here.
Well, it does boil down to people wanting open spaces versus people wanting to develop. And there's certainly a need for development, one could argue, and one could argue quite passionately that, you know, housing is needed and all that. Yeah, Lynn?
And I do want to reiterate the point I made that the Williamson Act is not anti-development. It's more rational development. But there's a lot of things coming from that land, and in some cases, researchers have successfully managed to figure out the value of the things that come from rangelands. There was a recent study also published in California Agriculture about the value of the rangelands around the Central Valley to agriculture in the state. And as you know, agriculture is hugely important to our economy in California. The value of pollination, the native bees that live on our rangelands in the Central Valley, to agriculture.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah,
to agriculture in the state. Is more than $2 billion. So it can be argued that a much smaller investment in the Williamson Act, which used to be about $37 million, is a bargain.
Well, there's this link to research that set us off on this program from UC Davis. And by the way, I want to mention it's on our website. Go to kqed.org/forum and click on the segment, and you can read the research for yourself, which appeared in the October-December issue of the California Agriculture. Well, that's actually a peer-reviewed journal, and it was done by three UC Davis doctoral students. Here's Rick from Palo Alto who says, this is very disturbing. It looks to me like our governments are so buried in debt that they can do nothing more than grasp aggressively for money. Forget about public service. The Williamson Act has helped keep agricultural land in San Mateo County in large tracts, which would soon disappear without this tax relief. We'll go to more of your calls. Kelly, you're on.
Oh, hi. I had also heard that rangelands could be helpful with climate change and resilience and that they could help.
Somehow I think we lost the connection. But what about the connection to climate change? Lauren Summer?
Yeah, I think this has been a really interesting question, especially with AB 32, which is kind of California's climate change law, set to kind of go into implementation just in a month or so. There's certainly practices that we know about that can kind of enhance the capacity of the land to absorb carbon. Right now, as I understand it, rangeland is not kind of part of these offset programs. This is maybe, say, so if you are a polluter, you can say, well, hey, I'm going to give some money to a forest. The forest is going to absorb carbon, and that's going to offset the pollution that I am putting in the air. So as I understand it right now, rangeland is not part of this program. A lot of ranchers are very eager to see it because it may be a way to kind of monetize some of the values that they see that this land is providing.
And more of your phone calls. We'll go next to Richmond. Welcome, a caller named Maya. Good morning.
Hi. Morning.
Hi. Yes, you're on the air.
I live in Richmond, and I just want to say that it's really convenient for me because there's like no public transportation and I can't cycle home. And I just wanted to bring up a fact that my friend is a real estate agent, and in the Berkeley Hills, they're actually seeing that the prices of the homes are declining in the hills because people want to be living in the flatland where they can lead more sustainable lives and, you know, ride their bike to the grocery store. So I was just wondering if the research is looking into the fact that perhaps living in the hills is not as desirable as people think it is.
Yeah, Lynn Hunziker.
Okay.
That's in your backyard, too.
It is in my backyard. So I wanted to say that I've heard it said that if you care about the wildlands of the state and the rangelands and the hills, you want to make life in the city as nice as it can be and have people live there and want to live there. I think that's a very valid, important conservation goal.
And we thank the caller, and we'll hear next from Julia. Hi, Julia. You're on the air on Forum.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having this talk, and everyone's asked questions that I thought of. So the only other thing that I was thinking of, a couple things all coming together, is the conservation groups or environmental groups helping to support. I look at Muir Woods, and I know there are national parks in Yellowstone, and they had the vision to set aside this land for generations. And I wondered if we can complement that and look at models like Costa Rica that are, if we do develop, then we preserve this land and we integrate all these different ecosystem services with the idea of national park or, an eco something where people can go out and enjoy the land, but also that they generate income and all the things that the other callers were talking about, too, with forestry and so forth.
Well, you're talking about public policy, really. I don't know if either of our guests in the studio want to comment on that, but certainly Lynn Hunziker, how responsive to the kind of thing the caller just outlined do you think our legislature is at this point?
I think right now the legislature—
with their backs against the walls—
they're really struggling with funding. I do think that one of the advantages— I love the vision of a California with— a mix of different ways of conserving land. I think what I mentioned earlier about the long-term vision, the idea of ecosystem services and all those things that rangelands provide is really important to consider the costs and benefits of doing things ahead, tremendous bargain in the Williamson Act. I also just want to point out that the nice thing about the Williamson Act and some of our more recent developments in conservation is that it doesn't cost the public to manage those lands. They're managed by the owner.
We'll have to let it rest there. Thank you, Lynn Hunziker, Professor of Rangeland Ecology and Management and Chair of the Division of Society and Environment, UC Berkeley. Thanks, Lauren Sommer, KQED Science and Environment Reporter. We also thank Daryl Sweet, who joined us. He's a fifth-generation cattle rancher. Another hour of Forum ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.